Syne, my dear. For auld lang syne. For auld lang syne, my dear.
We'll take
a cup of kindness yet.
For days
of auld lang syne.
The promise of a new year is here, but you might do better in 2022 by remembering 2021.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully,
for all of its highs and lows.
Quick checkers out, and then there were four. Elio Castro Nemes joins the four-time winners club.
The Taliban has entered the outskirts of the city.
It's ups and downs.
CBS announced Monday it plans to fill 25,000 jobs.
That pulling the trigger on anybody, but especially on this many people, is the right thing to do.
Your next trip around the sun shouldn't be done without a look at 2021. You'll get the big stories and the follow-ups.
FedEx officials have confirmed that Mr. Hull was a former employee at the facility.
My fingers are crossed that it doesn't happen again.
And even remember some not-so-smart crooks.
Face-to-face meeting so he could smack Mayor Winicky like a...
Police say he then grabbed a broom and started beating the man with it.
On Campbell's third try, he backed right through the front doors of the Elkhart Fire Department.
Let's count it down! 10!
So settle in, my friend. You're on the hook for 2021. Worth a second look.
3, 2, 1! Happy New Year!
It's the end of the year, and it's a countdown, so...
Number 15.
Shadley Cabalin talks about getting back to normal. Maybe.
For a while, normal life sounded like this. Crowds, concerts, human contact. People doing what people do best. Gathering together for a good time. Then COVID hit, and throughout the course of 2020, normal life started sounding less like this. And more like this. Stadiums, concert halls, local businesses, even the streets were empty. The hustle and bustle of normal life replaced by deafening silence. When just before the start of 2021, people began rolling up their sleeves for the COVID vaccine. And one by one, restrictions fell away.
Gym and music venue capacity will increase to 50%. Indoor restaurant capacity will increase to 75%.
Indy Mayor Joe hogs it in February. Slowly but surely, more people got vaccinated, and those stadiums, concert halls, businesses began filling up again. But with the pandemic still raging, those events were not without their fair share of safety precautions.
If you don't have your proof of vaccination, a card or printed copy, you can drive yourself and your train right on out of the Dead and Company concert.
Teams at the AAA level will start in May rather than April. MLB says hopefully by then, minor league players will be eligible to get the COVID vaccine before they're assigned to teams all across the country. The Indians say more than likely they'll start with limited attendance.
Chris Davis and Rob Connett reporting. Still, one by one, events that were either restricted or flat out canceled in 2020 returned in 2021. High school sporting events made a comeback, including state finals for both basketball and football.
In 2020, those attending the state finals had to wear a mask, but you don't have to this time if you don't want to.
So I think to the fan that's been there before, it's going to look relatively normal.
John Herrick and IHSAA Commissioner Paul Neidig. Professional sports also picked up steam again when Indy was chosen to host all of March Madness on the fly.
It's been a while since Indy has been this busy, and with the sun shining down, thousands of people were in downtown for the NCAA tournament Friday afternoon, and they came from all over the country.
Spokane flew in yesterday.
We're from Ohio. He's from Louisville. He's from Texas.
And they're excited and grateful that fans are allowed to attend these games.
Rob Connett reporting. And of course, after the pandemic kept fans away from the Indy 500 in 2020, they were back in full force in 2021. 135,000 of them.
I get emotional because these fans, last year was so tough, and this year,
We don't have full grandstand, but you got the feeling.
Elio Castroneves after this year's race. But sports weren't the only thing that came back this year. Conventions came back, like the Sweets and Snacks show.
Indy hosted 100 small conventions even during the pandemic. Senior Vice President Chris Gindelsberger says the Sweets and Snacks show brings 450 exhibitors and 8,000 attendees to downtown.
Eric Berman reporting. The ever-popular tabletop gaming convention Gen Con came back too.
This year was really emotional because it was like 2 years since I've seen a lot of these people.
I mean, obviously the board games are fun, but you know, it's that sense of community.
And while businesses were forced to shut down last year, in 2021.
Now we're getting to the point where it's getting warmer, people are wearing their masks, people are getting vaccinated, things are beginning to loosen up on us a little bit. It's nice to have business again and be open.
Marty Bacon, general manager of the Slippery Noodle. Whether it be for sports or music or just for fun, people are gathering together again. In fact, next year, Indiana will even be hosting a music festival in Garfield Park, featuring artists like Vampire Weekend and Bastille. That's predicted to be the largest music event Indiana has hosted in years. So after the deafening silence of last year, things may never be truly normal again. But as Indy Mayor Joe Hogsett said at the beginning of this year,
as a city, as a state, and as a nation, we have defeated illnesses before. We can, we must, and we will do this again if we unite to defend ourselves.
For 2021, Worth a Second Look, I'm Shyla Kabalin.
But not everyone believes getting back to normal is a good idea. Dr. Scott Steinecker is an epidemiologist and infectious disease specialist who practices in Fort Wayne. He believes the surge of COVID that's been happening over the past month is possibly due to what Hoosiers are no longer doing.
What are the things that we know effectively work? Well, masking, social distancing, small groups, not doing the things that we're doing here in Indiana. Just take a look at a football game and how many people are wearing masks. How many people are yelling, shouting, cheering, all things that we know create huge amounts of aerosols. Folks in Indiana are just COVID fatigue, and now we're seeing what happens when you don't do all the things that we said you need to do. On top of that, as a state, we're at, 47% vaccinated, something like that. And up here in my neck of the woods, we've got counties that are as low as 23% vaccinated.
Coming up, a kind of a conundrum.
Now they can drive an 18-wheeler from South Bend to Evansville, but they can't go from Evansville into Kentucky.
You're listening to 2021, Worth a Second Look. You're listening to 2021, Worth a Second Look.
Number 14.
2021 was a strange year for nature in Indiana. From the invasion of brood X to the deaths of hundreds of songbirds to the possibility of sick and dying deer. It's the story of boy meets girl, a story that only happens every 17 years. Boy and girl wriggle out of the ground. They shed their exoskeletons. They meet, they mate, they lay eggs, and they die. Donnie Burgess with state entomologist Megan Abraham.
It won't be a small amount of cicadas that come out to mate.
Brood X is actually going to be, there's going to be upwards of a million of these insects per acre in certain areas, depending on where you are.
Abraham says even though brood X cicadas are harmless, the millions of cicadas could get in your way if you're driving or riding your bike.
Just as quickly as they came, the cicadas were gone, banished underground until 2038. But Indiana's strange summer was just getting started.
In my lecture, I hope to make you all aware of our good friends, the birds.
In May and June, people started calling the Indiana Department of Natural Resources about dead and dying songbirds. Frank Rush with more.
Allison Gillette is the state ornithologist with the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. She said the disease causes crusting around the eyes, neurological problems, and is almost always fatal. So what's causing it?
We do not know. So what we're doing, because we don't know enough about this disease, is just assuming it is so far and taking the proper precautions just in case it is.
She said until until they figure out what causes the disease, the recommendation to keep your bird feeders and bird baths put up will remain.
In July, the deaths continued, and so did the investigation by Indiana DNR. John Herrick reports.
Through lots of tests, they've determined that the birds are not being affected by West Nile virus, avian influenza, some parasites, and other bacterial pathogens, but they still don't know what's causing so many birds to get sick or die in 69 of Indiana's 92 counties. The DNR recommends not feeding any birds and keeping your pets away from areas where birds have gotten sick or died.
As the summer turned to fall, the number of bird deaths decreased. But one question remained. What killed all of those songbirds? State ornithologist Allison Gillette.
We actually didn't come to a conclusion as to what was causing this disease. There were a lot of different hypotheses, a lot of different guesses as to what might have caused it, but those were still under investigation. My fingers are crossed that it doesn't happen again. But if it does, we'll have more evidence to test and try to come to a better idea as to what's causing this disease.
From dead birds to the threat of zombie deer disease, these zombie deer infected with chronic wasting disease, haven't been found in Indiana yet, reports Chris Davis.
It is, as far as we know, 100% fatal to deer.
Joe Caudill is a deer biologist with the Indiana Department of Natural Resources on Indiana Outdoors Radio.
Typically, a deer, once it's infected, will live about 2.5 years.
You may be asked to give a small sample of the meat if you're at a processor or taxidermist. They want to know if it gets into Indiana's deer population and where it is in the state if it does. You can expect officers to sample in different parts of the state.
2021 was a strange year for the economy, for Hoosiers, and for nature. The promise of normalcy in 2022 is not guaranteed, but rest assured there will never be another 2021. For 2021 Worth a Second Look, I'm Ashley Fowler.
Number 13.
Please let him go. We're going to as soon as you let him go.
Get your phone down here and go.
That was the sound of a man pleading for Vox Booker's freedom Saturday.
You'll probably recall the name Vox Booker if you've been keeping up with the news in 2020 and 2021. It was in 2020 when he was at Lake Monroe for some R&R and accused two white men of holding him against a tree, threatening his life, and saying, get a noose, not long after racially charged riots in the state.
There's a grand awakening in the communities across our nation about racial inequity and racial injustice. That's long overdue.
The lawyer for those two men accused denied that's what happened after they were investigated and charged.
It's deplorable that any person would be targeted because of their race. It is equally deplorable that someone would use their race to promote and arouse public passion over a false accusation. Mr. Purdy and Ms. McCord, they don't want to be here. They thought a quick and thorough investigation would reveal the truth, and it would be fairly reported, and they wouldn't have to do this. But it's affecting their lives.
In 2021, the saga was still happening when Booker was himself accused and charged. Donnie Burgess reports.
Booker maintains that the incident is a hate crime and that Sean Purdy and Jerry Edward Cox discussed lynching him. Both men deny that claim and have said Booker was trespassing on their property. A special prosecutor has filed two charges against Booker, battery and criminal trespassing. Purdy and Cox were also charged with battery and are due back in court on August 20th.
It wasn't long after that in September when Booker got in more trouble. Kurt Darling reports that Booker accused people of mistreating him at a bar because he's black.
Now he's charged with battery of a public safety official. Booker was at a downtown Indy bar on Sunday when he said intoxicated bar staffers were yelling racial slurs at him. Police were called, and when the officers said no one would be arrested, Booker is said to have shoved one of the officers. All the officers who were there wore body cameras.
Then in mid-November, Booker lost his lawyer.
The rule is you only get a public defender if you can't afford to hire your own lawyer. Vox Booker had requested and was granted a public defender after he was charged with battery related to a fight at Lake Monroe last year, but he has since raised over $30,000 in a GoFundMe for costs related to the case. Because of that, the judge has revoked his public defender, which means Booker will have to either represent himself in the case or hire his own lawyer.
You're listening to 2021, Worth a Second Look.
Number 12.
Drop the gun! Man, drop it, please! Please drop the gun, bro!
Oh Holding police accountable for their interactions with citizens has always been a duty of disciplinary boards. But since 2020, it has become a priority. In Indianapolis, that means changes to the police merit board. That is still happening as part of changes in the state's largest police department.
We want to have this independent and fair and transparent office so that we can show if something is wrong, then we can show that. If something is right, we can show that as well.
One police officer, or former police officer, who was once on the force in Indianapolis, was held accountable in another way in South Bend. His name? Josh Reynolds.
I feel this is a very sacred mission that we are trying to achieve here. And I think it's important that we not delay this any further.
The sacred mission is the South Bend Police Review Board. Reynolds was hired to be in charge of that board. What the mayor of South Bend didn't know was that Reynolds himself was disciplined 6 times while a member of the Indianapolis Metro Police Department. Reynolds declined the request to resign and made it a months-long battle to get him to go.
If I did step down, then this creation of this office really comes to a screeching halt.
Which the mayor and others wanted because they felt they couldn't have the credibility they wanted with South Bend's officers as long as the man in charge of the review board had been a discipline problem.
Josh Reynolds is the director of the review board. He's a former Indianapolis cop who was suspended 7 times during his time there.
And I posted something on social media. I took responsibility immediately for that because I knew I was wrong.
That has South Bend Mayor James Mueller calling for his resignation. Reynolds says he's staying put.
I will continue to stay in this office so long as I have the support of Clerk Jones and the support of the community.
In a town hall, he says his resignation now would stall efforts to effectively build the review board into a fair and transparent body. In response, Mueller's office still wants Reynolds to step down.
Kurt Darling reporting. It should be noted that Mueller did not hire Reynolds. He was hired by the city clerk. In August, once that was made public, the Common Council took away the clerk's power to hire for that position. In September, after being effectively castrated by the council, Reynolds had little choice if the review board was to continue to serve police and the public. This report from September 10th.
If I did step down, then this creation of this office really comes to a screeching halt.
That just wasn't true. Mayor James Mueller wanted him out. The Common Council took away his power. He had no credibility with the city cops that he would have been in charge of reviewing because his own record as a police officer in Indianapolis was full of incidents, as discovered by the South Bend Tribune. Mayor James Mueller says he's glad an embarrassing episode is over. Coming up, tears in Terre Haute.
Greg was a 30-year veteran of the Terre Haute Police Department.
And trouble in Hoosier Paradise.
They found him living in Utah, going by the name Admiral Abram the Pirate.
You're listening to 2021, Worth a Second Look.
Ground floor perfumery, stationery, and leather.
The reality of 2021. A trip to the store just isn't that fun anymore.
Menswear.
You're listening to 2021, Worth a Second Look. John Herrick reports.
Number 11.
One thing that's probably felt like a nightmare to you is how much the price of everything seems to be going up. The supply chain log jams have meant you aren't getting the goods you're buying as soon as you'd like to get them. And you'd probably like to know when they'll be fixed. Well, President Biden selected former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg to be his transportation secretary. Buttigieg says this problem goes back a long time.
The issue is that there's even more demand than the supply chain can support. Remember, we are relying on supply chains that were built generations ago. It's one of the reasons why this entire year we have been talking about and working on infrastructure.
Buttigieg in an interview earlier this year on CNN.
Think about it. When you see these pictures of those ships waiting at anchor, waiting outside of the ports, that means the ships are already there. So it's everything after that that we have to work to unclog.
One expert believes solving the supply chain problems, which are also causing some of the inflation issues, are a matter of common sense. Kurt Darling reports.
For starters, Integrated Distribution Services CEO Mark DeFabis says federal regulations on truckers need need to be loosened up, especially on truckers between the ages of 18 and 21 who cannot cross state lines.
I mean, right now, they can drive an 18-wheeler from South Bend to Evansville, but they can't go from Evansville into Kentucky.
He tells Inside Indiana Business throwing out those rules would pay huge dividends, especially since he says they won't find large amounts of new truckers overnight.
Indiana Republican Senator Todd Young says one bill that could help is the Drive Safe Act. Young says it is law as of November 15th, and it would allow younger drivers age 18 to 20 to cross state lines. Another Hoosier Republican in Congress, Larry Bouchon, says you're not getting the right attention from lawmakers.
My constituents in Indiana are experiencing rising inflation, paying gas prices at the pump that are nearly 70% higher than last year, and seeing their energy bills increase just in time for them to need to heat their homes in the winter. That's what I'm concerned about.
During a hearing in November, Bouchon called out people who support renewable energy projects, saying the timelines for some wind and solar energy goals are unrealistic and they can't be accomplished. So what about the gas pump? Well, prices at one point looked like they were heading towards $4 a gallon in Indiana, mostly because there was such a high level of demand for gas. Well, Gas Buddy's head of petroleum analysis, Patrick DeHaan, says that's a trend that's been changing lately.
That is, for a long time, last couple of months, demand has outpaced supply, but with OPEC slowly increasing on a monthly basis and with COVID cases going up, it's possible that we could see supply retake demand in the month of December or January. So things are slowly starting to improve.
He urges you to always shop around for the lowest prices and don't just fill up at the first gas station you see. You're already getting some money back in the form of a state tax rebate next year. House Republicans are also pushing for a tax cut. Well, Governor Holcomb says he'll need more details first.
We'll definitely want to see what tax cuts proposed and what effect it would have, not just on this year, but most importantly, as we go into a budget year, when we make these fiscal decisions that have a long-term effect.
And there's this word of caution about a tax cut from Senate Majority Leader Mark Messmer of Jasper.
Sales tax revenue is at a high level. A lot of that's due to the federal stimulus money that continues to push through our economy and people spending money. When that federal stimulus money dries up, I don't think we can accurately predict where those tax revenues will settle out.
The 10-week legislative session begins in earnest in January. For 2021, worth a second look, I'm John Herrick.
And speaking of the legislative session that's coming up and your own personal financial jam, it's been determined there's about $5 billion in the bank.
It's very positive news. We've all been very careful with how we've used our fiscal resources, and I think it's the opportunity to deliberate on what we do with these financial resources.
Ryan Mishler is a state senator and chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Beginning in January, the state will debate whether to pay down some debt with that dough.
We do have a big liability out there, and that's the $9.8 billion we owe on the pre-96 pension debt.
Or to vote on that tax cut that'll directly benefit you.
I think we'll still continue to have the discussion and the debate between the House and the Senate. And this revenue forecast, I think, supports our position.
House Ways and Means Chairman Dr. Tim Brown.
Citizens have worked hard and deserve a break.
They'll argue that out starting in January.
Number 10.
This is Sid Collins saying welcome to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
It's considered a challenge of a lifetime to win just one.
Sleek, high-powered steel steeds leap forward in the start of the Indianapolis Memorial Day Automobile Race.
Many have tried again after winning one, but failed.
Mario Andretti slowing down.
Obviously, he's got an engine or transmission gone.
And once again, a great disappointment for Mario.
It said the Indianapolis Motor Speedway herself chooses who is worthy. Until this year, only three had been chosen.
A.J. Foyt is going to make motor racing history. It's all over. A.J. has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Becomes the third four-time winner of the Indianapolis 500.
In what could only be described as a storybook ending to the 105th running of the Indianapolis 500, Elio Castroneves' win this year meant just a little more, not only to himself, but to the racing community in general. At 45 years old and no longer a full-time competitor in IndyCar, the 2020 Indianapolis 500 would be the only race Elio Castroneves would run that season. It was also his last with Team Penske, the team that he dedicated his entire career to, winning his first three 500s with them in 2001, 2002, and 2009. Elio found it tough to leave the familiarity of the Penske stable, but felt it was time to move on. Though what made it even tougher were the circumstances surrounding the 2020 race.
It's disappointing for sure.
Indianapolis Motor Speedway event without fans is a tough one.
COVID cases are rising in Marion County.
Among the death, economic hardship, and other difficulties caused by the pandemic, not only were 33 drivers looking for a win come May 30th of 2021, but so were everyday people who, after missing last year's race, were finally able to watch it in person this year.
The Indianapolis Motor Speedway has announced it will allow up to 40% capacity for this year's Indy 500. Approximately 135,000 people at the track.
And they were in for a show, as Castroneves, now 46, with his new Meyer-Shank Racing team, qualified in the Fast 9 and stayed there all day come race day. He ended up in a duel up front with eventual IndyCar Series champ Alex Palou.
Palou now starts to pop to the outside. Alex Palou has the door shut by Elio Castroneves. Castroneves holds him off out of turn number three.
They are going to run into traffic here in the short chute as they exit turn number four. That is Rosenquist. He's in the way. Castroneves with the lead.
Elio's been in this position before. A dogfight to the end. Alex Palou works into the high side of the start-finish line.
In the end, the experience of Castroneves outweighed the youth of the 24-year-old Palou.
Off turn four for the final time. Elio Castroneves. Castroneves comes to the start-finish line. Quick checkers out, and then there were four. Elio Castroneves joins the four-time winners club. He wins the 105th running of the Indianapolis 500.
The fourth to four, and he had you to thank for it.
I love Indianapolis. You guys don't understand. The fans, they give me energy. I'm serious. They don't understand. This is absolutely incredible.
AJ Foyt said afterwards that no one deserved it more than Elio. But the win led to more for him. Not only his own special place in history alongside Foyt, Al Unser, and Rick Mears, but a chance to go for number five in 2022.
Will you be back next year to chase number five?
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? Now I can't stop. I'm going to be full time, I'll tell you that.
A ride which he secured with Meyer-Shank Racing, alongside his former Penske teammate Simon Pagenaud. He expects to contend for the IndyCar Series Championship. For 2021, worth a second look, I'm Kurt Darling.
Karen, look at Karen's face, that tells you the story. She just crossed her fingers, she got everything crossed. She just praying to God that he can make it around the rest of this last remaining lap.
He's in the short chute between turns one and two.
Remembering Al Unser Sr., who died December 9th.
Here it is.
Unser was 82 and had cancer.
Your brother, Al Unser, joins A.J. Foyt as one of only two men ever to win the Indianapolis 500 four times in his life.
That is fabulous. That is absolutely fabulous. I just cannot believe it.
Bobby, congratulations. That is simply fantastic.
Thank you.
That's just great.
That's the 500 from 1987 on ABC.
Your brother, Bobby, called the race, and he was just a basket case up there for the last laps. You want to say anything to him?
I'll tell you what, Bobby, I'm a basket case too.
Coming up, Eric Berman helps you remember Hoosiers who died in 2021. You're listening to 2021, Worth Another Look.
Number 9.
Laws are like sausages. It is better not to see them being made. You have probably heard some version of that line attributed to the man who unified Germany in the 1800s, Otto von Bismarck, and many others since then. If you assume that Bismarck was right, you may have a better handle on what happened in the U.S. Congress in 2021. The finished sausage is the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. It was much amended, that's the sausage making, but final passage came in November. Significant for the roads you drive, says NDOT Commissioner Joe McGinnis.
We have a never-ending supply of roads and bridges that need attention in the state of Indiana, whether that's a state highway, interstate, or a local road or a county bridge.
Making I-65 and I-70 six lanes wide from border to border is one possibility. With money that wasn't there before, the state gets $6.5 billion to improve highways and more than $400 million to repair and rebuild bridges. NDOT will also receive $100 million to expand Indiana's network of electric vehicle charging stations. Sounds like a lot of money, doesn't it? Congressman Jim Banks thinks so.
We're talking about $1.5 trillion, maybe it's more, maybe it's less, plus the $1.2 trillion, on top of a almost $30 trillion national debt. And right now, today, we have the highest inflation that we've had in over 30 years.
And Congresswoman Victoria Spartz.
We have $29 trillion of debt. We have two major programs that are going bankrupt, Medicare and Social Security, very soon. And we talk about more spending.
And then there's the other legislation dividing Congress and the nation, the president's Build Back Better bill.
This is a bill we should pass.
A sweeping social spending and climate measure. The House has passed it. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer needs all 50 of his Democrats to fall in line. And any Senate changes will force the House to vote on it again. And by the way, how is your budget shaping up as the new year approaches?
Inflation reaching its highest level in nearly 40 years. Consumer prices rose by 6.8% in November over the previous year. That's according to data released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. President Biden acknowledging that prices are rising.
Fox's Marianne Rafferty quoting economists who say inflation could follow you to the grocery store well into the spring.
There are other economists who are saying, you know, these concerns are overstated. And primarily because, you know, the government spending, it will be spread over a number of years, starting next year.
One of the two Indiana Democrats in the U.S. House, Andre Carson, whose view is not shared by Republican Larry Bouchon.
My constituents in Indiana are experiencing rising inflation, paying gas prices at the pump that are nearly 70% higher than last year, and seeing their energy bills increase just in time for them to need to heat their homes in the winter. That's what I'm concerned about.
With the Senate still considering the bill in mid-December, the most recent cost estimate was $1.9 trillion. Most of that money would be spent to reduce the cost of child care and health care and to fight back against climate change. Examples. You could claim a $900 tax credit for buying a battery-assisted bicycle. Companies would be allowed to offer tax-free benefits for workers who use e-bikes for commuting. Are you or any member of your family diabetic? The Build Back Better bill would set a cap of $35 a month on insulin if you have Medicare or private insurance. The president proposed making 2 years of community college free. That was dropped, but the bill still would increase the maximum Pell Grant by $550. The Congressional Budget Office says all that would increase the federal deficit by $367 billion over the next 10 years. The Democrats say they've accounted for that with a proposal to enhance tax enforcement, prompting this response from Republican Senator Todd Young of Indiana.
The Democrats are engaged in a reckless multi-trillion dollar spending spree.
For 2021, worth another look, I'm Stan Lear.
Number 8.
Sunday, January 24th, a cold, snowy morning on Indy's east side. Five people, including a pregnant woman, found shot to death in a home on Adams Street. Chris Davis had the report.
Indianapolis Metro Police Chief Randall Taylor says officers got a call about a shooting at 36th. That's where they found a child shot. That person was taken to Riley Children's Health. Later on, they got information that led them to the house on Adams, and that is where they found five people shot dead, including a pregnant woman, and her baby could not be saved.
I don't know what kind of lie they listened to in their head that would tell them that pulling the trigger on anybody, but especially on this many people, is the right thing to do.
Police do not believe it was a random act or that anybody else is in immediate danger.
The following day, an arrest was made in the shooting.
Raymond Childs III shot his siblings, the pregnant Kira Hawkins, and father and stepmom after the argument. A probable cause document says Childs' father said, "I'm sorry, Raymond, I love you," before being shot.
Indianapolis would break a record in 2021 for most homicides in a single year. The violence was not held to just the capital city, though. In February, a triple shooting in the second largest city in the state.
Fort Wayne police say Wednesday night, 32-year-old Joseph Bossard went into the Shell gas station at Hobson Road and got into an argument with three boys. After leaving the store, surveillance footage showed Bossard pulling up behind the boys' car and firing a handgun inside.
The following month, a teenager was killed in South Bend.
18-year-old Elijah Torres was shot and killed Monday morning. South Bend police have arrested Ernest Clark Jr. for Torres's death.
In May, a man was arrested for a triple homicide in Peru.
On Friday, Miami County police were sent to a home in Peru for a welfare check. There, they found the bodies of Jessica Sizemore, Josiah Hall, and 4-year-old Ray Lynn Sizemore, shot to death. Mitchell Page was arrested Sunday for their murders.
There's no excuse for murdering
three people, even more so when you murder a four-year-old child. All I can think of, that's an act of cowardice.
State Police Sergeant Tony Slocum. He says Paige and Jessica Sizemore have a child together.
The state was rocked by the news of a shooting at a factory in Frankfort this summer.
The tragedies that Clinton County has faced today is something that will never...
Clinton County Sheriff Richard Kelly.
Apologize.
At a Wednesday evening news conference.
Go unforgotten or unnoticed.
Gary Farrell worked at the plant, as did the women who were shot. A lot of people saw it happen and called 911 with his name and description. Farrell was chased at 90 miles per hour until he wrecked in a construction zone in Frankfort.
Prosecutors looked at the possibility of the death penalty against Farrell, who tried to kidnap Promise Mays, then shot her grandmother Pamela Sled when she tried to intervene before he shot and killed Mays. And in November, four people found shot to death in a home in Fort Wayne. Police say 20-year-old Samuel Long shot and killed his parents, 50-year-old Mark Long and 45-year-old Lisa Long, along with his sister, 15-year-old Mahala. He then shot and killed himself.
There was an elderly female who was also in the residence, but she was in a different part of the house. She was able to call dispatch and leave the residence unharmed.
Captain Steve Stone with the Allen County Sheriff's Department.
Things like this are tragic, you know, any time of the year, but, you know, around the holidays, there's going to be a lot of grieving.
And a lot of Hoosiers continue to grieve from a violent 2021 and hope 2022 brings some relief. For 2021 Worth a Second Look, I'm Rob Cotting.
Remembering Hoosiers who left us in 2021, here's Eric Berman.
He was born Loxley Hampton. At age 12, his father handed him a trombone, and Slide Hampton became a legend of the Indiana Avenue jazz scene. After nearly 60 years in music, he won a Grammy. He won his second 7 years later.
The checkered flag is out. Goodyear makes a move. Little Al wins by just a few tenths.
Bob Jenkins was the voice of the 500 for 9 years in the 1990s after getting his start as a pit reporter. He anchored ESPN's NASCAR coverage for 21 years from the network's first months on the air.
The Indy 500 is still the greatest race in the world. 11 rows of three still takes your breath away at the start, and it's still the fastest race in the world.
Even Jenkins' long run at the Speedway couldn't match Robin Miller. Miller covered the track for the Indianapolis Star for 33 years. When the Star fired him, he stayed on for 20 more with ESPN, the Speed Network, Racer Magazine, and NBC. In the 70s, when he wasn't reporting, he got behind the wheel himself for a 7-year career in midget races. Another midget car veteran made the jump to IndyCar in 1962. Bobby Unser finished last in his first 500 in 64, but 4 years later, he won by nearly a full lap.
So I go an extra lap. I get the checkered flag. Now, officially, no matter how you look at it, I won the race. But I'm going to go another lap just in case somebody doesn't know how to count.
The Unser family knew how to count. They've won 9 times at Indy. Bobby had 3 of them.
I had gone through 26 hours of labor, and he said that no man really understood that. And I thought, yes, finally somebody recognizes that.
Indiana lost 2 first ladies in 2021. Susan Bye was 29 when her husband Evan was elected governor. 7 years later, she became Indiana's first lady in a century to give birth while in office. Edgar and Pat Whitcomb had been married 15 years when Whitcomb was elected governor. She made a point of learning how to greet people in different languages so foreign visitors would feel at home. She greeted Hoosiers, too. In 4 years as first lady, she visited all 92 counties. Twice.
You're listening to 2021, Worth a Second Look. You're listening to 2021, Worth a Second Look. A look back at 2021. The biggest stories, what you may remember most and some stories you may have forgotten, and what matters most about those stories to start the new year.
Number 7.
At the end of August, Indiana acquired thousands of new neighbors at a National Guard base and training facility near Edinburgh. Eric Berman reports.
What happens in Kabul amid reports that the Taliban has entered the outskirts of the city?
President Biden announced in April the U.S. would end its 20-year presence in Afghanistan. By mid-August, the Taliban were in charge, and the U.S. was evacuating not only the final troops, but thousands of Afghans who had helped the U.S. during the war. Those who made it out found temporary shelter at 8 U.S. military bases, including Camp Atterbury. Even before the first refugees arrived, Adjutant General Dale Isles, says Hoosiers were asking how they could help.
We are in the process of setting up a formal method for receiving donations. You can call the Indiana National Guard, and then once we build this apparatus to help, we will make sure that we get your information into the right hands.
The first 1,000 refugees arrived over Labor Day weekend. 7,200 would eventually pass through Camp Atterbury. The Guard eventually set up 9 armories around the state to receive donations. In the first 6 weeks, Hoosiers donated over 1 million items. Salvation Army Major Mark Johnson delivered 1,600 coats from the group's annual Coats for Kids drive.
We trust that this action will help them not only feel physically warm, but that they will understand and know how much Hoosiers care for the needs of fellow human beings, regardless of where each of us were born on this planet.
The Guard put out a call for some items in particular, like baby formula. Half the refugees are under 14, and 30 women gave birth after their arrival. Lyle says the National Guard made a special effort to help kids adapt to their new home.
I see young boys and young girls out playing soccer. We're getting ready to put a soccer tournament on for them. We're offering educational classes that consist of art for therapy. We're also talking about resiliency. We're also doing things for the English language and our culture.
Many of the refugees fled Afghanistan with literally nothing but the clothes on their back. So there was a need for winter hats, coats, gloves, and socks. Even the Indiana General Assembly got involved. House Speaker Todd Houston announced in November the legislature's annual bipartisan charity drive will be for the refugees.
I just couldn't be more proud. I've heard from so many different organizations who are trying to support these good folks, and unbelievable efforts by so many organizations. So, you know, it's our way to help, too.
And Governor Holcomb says he was inundated with calls starting in September from businesses offering to hire them.
The number of folks that say, we'll hire everyone that wants a job. I'll hire 50. I'll hire 100. I'll hire how many you got. We'll figure it out. Don't speak English? We'll figure that out. I hope we're an example of a state that figures it out.
About 90% of the Afghans will be in Indiana only temporarily. Many already have family in the U.S. They were at Atterbury only long enough to process their immigration status and undergo health screenings, including vaccinations. But college professor Naheed Sharifi is among 250 who had settled in Indiana by Thanksgiving. She'll be studying at IU Bloomington.
People of the United States has a heart of the gold. Thank you so much for everything. In difficult condition, they never leave Afghan people alone. And I hope I can make the world around me a better place for others like them.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security expects about 700 refugees will eventually resettle in Indiana. Holcomb says Hoosiers have met a moral obligation to help those who helped the U.S. over the last two decades.
The smiles that we saw on that tour, from where they came, off balance, off a plane, missing luggage, dealing with health issues, that journey in and of itself, that peace is priceless, and it fuels us to want to do more.
Number six.
Greg Ferency was a good man, a 30-year member of the Terre Haute PD, and worked in this community for many, many, many years. It's a sad day for this community and for the Terre Haute Police Department.
That sad day was July 7th. Just before 2:15 p.m., Detective Greg Ferency walked outside of the FBI building in Terre Haute and was shot and killed.
Greg was not only a longstanding member of the police department here in Terre Haute, but a valued member of our FBI family. He had worked side by side with us at our Terre Haute office since 2010. As a federally deputized task force officer.
Paul Keenan is the assistant special agent in charge of the FBI in Indianapolis.
This incident occurred just before 2:15 Wednesday afternoon when the suspect approached Detective Ferency outside our building and fired at him. An agent inside our office heard the gunshots, came outside, and engaged the suspect and fired at him. The suspect subsequently left the scene and drove himself to the hospital, where he ultimately underwent surgery for his wounds, and he is currently in custody at the hospital.
It was later revealed that the man to blame, according to police, was Shane Meehan, a former candidate for mayor of Terre Haute
Eric Berman.
Shane Meehan was one of two independents to challenge Republican Mayor Duke Bennett. He finished last with 1% of the vote. Meehan was a former employee at the federal prison in Terre Haute. He was working for UPS when he ran. He said in a campaign interview he'd talk with students to reduce the risk of gun violence in schools.
For 11 years, Greg served as a task force officer in the FBI's Terre Haute Resident Agency. He started out by working drug crimes as part of our Safe Streets Task Force.
Ferenczi's funeral was held July 13th. He was honored not only by his Terre Haute PD family, but also by the head of the FBI, who traveled to Terre Haute to attend the funeral of a man who had wanted to become an agent, but who had not quite made it there when he was murdered.
He was good at it, not only because he was a tenacious investigator, but because he fit right in. By just looking at him with his bald head and goatee, you couldn't quite tell if Greg was a good guy or a bad guy, and I mean that in the best possible way.
A man in blue.
Some people even came back to thank him for being so kind and so professional while he arrested them.
Chris Ray remembering Ferenczi's dedication. His Terre Haute police boss, Chief Sean Keene, says Ferenczi showed that same dedication no matter what job he was doing.
Whether it was methamphetamine labs, terrorism, human trafficking, or criminal gangs, if Greg became involved, he went all in.
Ferenczi worked double duty as a Terre Haute cop and FBI task force member up until his murder last week. In August, more info about the man accused. Ashley Fowler reports.
The legal team for Shane Meehan told a judge Friday that he has been diagnosed with several health conditions, including a traumatic brain injury and post-concussion syndrome. They said he'd previously been in the hospital for considering suicide.
And in November, Terre Haute honored its native son.
City council members voted unanimously Wednesday to rename Blakely Avenue from Wabash Avenue to Aikman Place. It will be called Detective Greg Ferenczi Memorial Road.
Coming up,
a blocking foul by the coronavirus. Dr. Naismith never prescribed anything like that.
How an entire state came together to help defeat a most imposing foe.
But the pandemic was an imposing opponent.
You're listening to 2021, Worth a Second Look. You're listening to 2021, Worth a Second Look.
Number five.
Like baseball has always been there for America in Field of Dreams, for Hoosiers, it's always been basketball.
Go 20 minutes on, 10 off, and 20 on. I had a different schedule on mine.
And so did the coronavirus until this March. Stan Lear on what successfully brought thousands of people to Indiana.
Here we go, fellas. Here we go, America.
All the March Madness in one state.
Let's make a little history tonight in Indianapolis.
It was history of a better brand than what you got the year before. Remember what didn't happen in 2020? The Division I men's college basketball tournament. It was canceled. The NCAA's announcement attributed that decision to the evolving COVID-19 public health threat. A blocking foul by the coronavirus. Dr. Naismith never prescribed anything like that, but the pandemic was an imposing opponent. Not in 2021, although for the first time since the first tournament in 1939, there would be certain concessions. The venues would be focused on a single city.
And it could be in Indianapolis. I'm Rob Connett.
We were not going to be able to host the tournament in 13 different sites. It was just through the pandemic, it was unreasonable to expect that.
Committee Chair Mitch Barnhart, the NCAA says it's in preliminary talks with the state of Indiana and the city of Indianapolis to host the entire men's basketball D1 tournament in the metro area. And they're still working out details like venues, practice facilities, hotel arrangements, and medical resources.
Plenty of venues to choose from. IU Simon Scott Assembly Hall, Purdue's Mackey Arena, and in Indy itself, Butler's Hinkle Fieldhouse, the Indiana Farmers Coliseum, the home of the Colts, Lucas Oil Stadium, and the home of the NBA's Pacers and the WNBA Fever, Bankers Life Fieldhouse, which has since been renamed Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Think of the possibilities. So many chances for Indiana teams to win close to home, if not in their own venue. Actually, only one team from Indiana even made it into the field. Although a former favorite showed up, reviving this memory for Valparaiso fans.
The Drew for the win! Gone! Oh! He did it! Bryce Drew did it!
Dabo has won the game! A miracle!
No miracle this time. Iowa knocked out the team Bryce Drew coaches, Grand Canyon, in the first round, 86-74. Leaving it to Purdue, that one team from Indiana making the field to carry the hopes of the state that has long made basketball its first love, only to be disappointed again. The Boilermakers, a fourth-seeded team, lost in the first round 78-69 to a 13-seed North Texas. But Indiana and Indianapolis did come away with a win.
It's been an amazing boost to not only financially, but employee morale.
Katie Harris owns Iozzo's Garden of Italy. She missed March Madness in 2020, but 2021 was even better than the last tournament year.
I kind of did a quick figure, and about the 3 weeks that the tournament has been going on, we're up about 25.5% over 2019 sales.
But how? Even with the concentrated locations, how did thousands of players, coaches, and fans gather in Indiana and beat the virus? Six referees were sent home after one tested positive. Players, coaches, team staff members, and officials all wore contact tracing devices. And Kurt Darling reports, it worked.
Researchers with several organizations were among the crowds at NCAA tournament games, not to watch the games, but the fans. They were looking to see how many people were wearing a mask and wearing it correctly. Their findings show that out of the 20,000 people they observed at tournament games, 74% were properly wearing a mask over their nose and mouth. Masks were required by all inside of the tournament bubble in March. Researchers say it's the first comprehensive study into mask-wearing behavior.
And for Indiana and its capital city, March Madness 2021 was something to celebrate.
Coach Drew and Baylor complete college basketball's greatest rebound and rebuild with a championship.
For 2021, worth a second look, I'm Stan Lear.
Number four.
Jobs were plentiful in 2021.
Camp Atterbury is looking for janitors, cooks, food service workers, and dishwashers.
CVS announced Monday it plans to fill 25,000 jobs. 475 of those jobs will be in Indiana.
Forest River RV will be adding 500 new jobs in Noble County.
FedEx says an increase in demand is driving their need to find new workers. They're looking to add 1,200 workers at their facilities in Greenwood, Zionsville, and Indianapolis.
But workers were not.
Carmel Clay Schools tells Wish TV they still need about 40 bus drivers and 15 food service employees.
The park in Santa Claus says it's capping daily attendance and requiring visitors to buy tickets online and schedule their visit. The park said on Facebook that it's making the changes because there are not enough workers.
For the second school year in a row, Evansville Vanderburg schools will not have enough bus drivers to bring every student to school and back home.
Part of that, according to some Indiana lawmakers, had to do with the expanded unemployment benefits being handed out because of COVID. Kurt Darling reports.
Hundreds of businesses throughout Indiana have said they're struggling to find workers. Braun says that's because of expanded unemployment benefits due to the pandemic that have many people making more on unemployment than they would working.
Right now, you're throttling down the economy because of these unemployment benefits still being there.
But even after these payments came to an end, Indiana employers still struggled to find workers. Rob Connett with more.
There was much speculation that this was caused by a rather generous unemployment insurance. Those days are over. We're back to normal.
Ball State economist Mike Hicks tells Wish TV some of the reasons for the labor shortage, changes in lifestyle, which causes a need for change in work, and people just not happy with their current jobs and pay and wanting to change career paths. He says the ongoing lack of workers won't be fixed overnight either.
I think the best way to think about this is the labor markets adjust over a period of time.
Hicks says the best way to solve the problem, employers offering higher wages.
Not everything was bleak for Indiana's employers and employees. Rob Connett and Indiana's Secretary of Commerce.
The average hourly wage is up, which is a really important metric for us, on the transactions that have happened in 2021. And that results in total payroll being up in the state of Indiana. It's over $1.6 billion, I think.
Brad Chambers also tells Inside Indiana Business there are more investments in the state, like Toyota's $800 million expansion in Princeton, which will create more than 1,000 new jobs.
And Kurt Darling reports.
Between Amazon in Fort Wayne, Apple in Clayton, and Toyota in Princeton, nearly 3,000 new jobs are up for grabs in Indiana. Governor Holcomb says looking ahead, he says that growth is ready to expand to places like Gary and Jeffersonville.
These two opposite ends of our state, Jeffersonville and the Gary, that whole region, the sky's really the limit for where we end up in 10 or 20 years, and that's what we're planning for.
He tells Inside Indiana Business now the big push is filling those jobs.
In 2022, you can probably expect more of the same. Eric Berman.
IU's annual forecast predicts the labor shortage and supply chain issues will continue in 2022, but forecasters still project economic growth in Indiana, most of it in service industries. Economist Kyle Anderson says productivity is still growing, and income growth means people have money to spend.
For 2021 Worth a Second Look, I'm Ashley Fowler.
With the stories of Hoosiers you've lost in 2021, here's Eric Berman.
Irv Cross starred at Hammond High School in basketball and track, but it was his football skill that put him in two Pro Bowls as a defensive back for the Philadelphia Eagles. He made history twice as a broadcaster, first as the first black hired as a full-time network sports analyst, then alongside Brent Musburger and Phyllis George on the NFL Today, the first of the NFL studio pregame shows. Terry Curry served as a deputy prosecutor twice, once under a Republican, once under a Democrat. 16 years after his second return to private practice, he ran for the top job and won. He was reelected twice before a battle with prostate cancer prompted his resignation in 2019.
It's killing me to have to step down at this time. I love this office. I love this job. However, our collective family mean the world to me. And I owe it to them and to myself to focus on my health.
Roger Hawkins was once called the pulse of the Muscle Shoals rhythm section. The Mishawaka-born drummer cracked the top 40 for the first time when he was still a teenager. He went on to supply the beat for Wilson Pickett, Aretha Franklin, and others at Atlantic Records. In 1969, he became a founding member of Muscle Shoals and played on another 10 years worth of hits. Bobby Leonard's free throws against Kansas gave IU its second national championship, but he was playing gin rummy as a young NBA player when he got the nickname that stayed with him for life, Slick. He went on to win three ABA championships coaching the Pacers, then worked for 26 years as Mark Boyle's color commentator. He's also a big reason the Pacers still exist. It was Leonard and his wife Nancy who organized the 1977 telethon to keep the Pacers afloat.
The votes for President of the United States are as follows.
Coming up,
Joseph R. Biden Jr.
A trip to the U.S. Capitol. You're listening to 2021, Worth a Second Look. You're listening to 2021, Worth a Second Look. On the way to justice for two Hoosier babies. In January, Asiah Mollick was found dead by his grandmother with 23 rib fractures. In late December, his father was arrested.
There were 23 separate rib fractures at various stages of healing.
St. Joseph County Prosecutor Ken Cotter says after Asiah was found dead, the father, Averius Mollick, told cops that he tripped down the stairs and fell on his son. Then a similar incident happened again. Cotter says doctors couldn't say for sure that didn't happen, so Mollick is not charged directly with his son's death. But he is charged with four felony counts of neglect of a dependent. In August, Mercedes Lane was missing, causing police in northern Indiana to search the woods. She was found dead. Police believe they have the man who did it, and this report from late December indicates the case may soon be closed. Rob Conant.
Justin Miller was charged with one count of murder after he led investigators in northern Indiana to the body of a missing girl, Mercedes Lane, in some woods near the Stark and Marshall County line. Now, ABC 57 says Miller will be in court on Monday for a hearing on the plea agreement, although details on what he has agreed to have not been released. Miller, who is the cousin of the little girl's father, was supposed to be taking care of Mercedes the weekend she went missing. Her parents, Kenny Lane and Tiffany Coburn, were charged with neglect of a dependent.
Number three.
3,228 new cases of coronavirus.
Having six deaths per day.
30 more people died from the virus.
The outlook was still bleak to start the new year.
Although we have seen a decrease in new cases recently, our percent positivity remains high.
Dr. Jeremy Adler, a family doctor in Lafayette in December of 2020. Up to that point, COVID vaccines were in their very late stages of clinical trials, and it was all part of Operation Warp Speed under then-President Trump. The first vaccine to get initial approval was the two-dose shot from Pfizer that same month. Then, in January...
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear...
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear...
that I will faithfully execute...
that I will faithfully execute.
It would be up to newly elected President Joe Biden to roll out the rest, which included the Moderna and Johnson & Johnson shots. In Indiana, all three vaccines started rolling out for medical workers and essential personnel in mid-January. Then in March,
over 86,000 Hoosiers age 80 and up are going to receive their first dose of the coronavirus vaccine today.
Donnie Burgess reporting, when everyone could get it, interest was high.
IMS is one of the mass vaccination locations across the state, but the Indiana Health Department says they have already filled up all of their spots.
That report from Rob Connett. Indiana's vaccination rate would hit an all-time high in April, which is right around the time when debates started heating up at the State House over COVID restrictions still in place in Indiana.
The order requires everyone in the county to wear masks indoors.
And that included Governor Holcomb's public health emergency order.
To ensure that the state of Indiana is in the absolute best position to get the federal funding necessary.
The state had slowly been backing off of COVID restrictions, but the hot-button topic was still about what happens if this kind of emergency happens again. State House Republicans passed a bill that would give the legislators the right to call themselves into a special session in the event of a health emergency, something traditionally that only the governor had the authority to do.
I remain unconvinced that the paths that we're going down right now are constitutional.
Governor Holcomb vetoed.
36 ayes, 10 nays. The veto has been overridden.
The veto override means the law passed by mostly Republicans stands and that now local governments have to approve those orders.
Chris Davis reporting. Holcomb has taken the case to the state Supreme Court, where Attorney General Todd Rokita got involved.
Governor Holcomb said it was unconstitutional and sued the legislature. Attorney General Todd Rokita sued to keep the governor from using an outside attorney in the matter, saying Holcomb is wrong and the legislature is right.
The whole case will be heard by the state Supreme Court in April of 2022. As the people who were eager to get vaccinated for COVID got their shots, vaccination rates fell off, and they fell off hard. It would be 9 months from January 1st for Indiana to have 50% of all eligible Hoosiers fully vaccinated. People continued to get infected, and State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box's fears soon became reality.
We know that the more infections that we have, the higher risk we have of more mutations occurring.
Enter the Delta COVID variant.
We know that a lot of the country, unfortunately, has now been exposed to the Delta variant.
A more infectious strain of COVID that was not impervious, but rendered vaccines slightly less effective.
We know that it is competing well with the Delta variant. In other words, people are getting infected with the Omicron variant, even though the Delta variant is around.
Now the number of people going to the hospital with COVID is rising again in Indiana.
98% of those hospitalizations are unvaccinated patients.
Brian Tabor with the Indiana Hospitals Association. Since the beginning of the pandemic in March of 2020, 51% of all eligible Hoosiers ages 5 and up are fully vaccinated. Over 1.8 million cases of COVID and its variants have been confirmed in Indiana. Just over 18,000 Hoosiers have died of COVID.
We will probably be living with COVID for quite a while.
For 2021, worth a second look, I'm Kurt Darling.
We could all use a little laugh after this year. Maybe these stupid criminals of 2021 will help. Here are some of my personal favorites from the news team.
James Campbell decided to steal his friend's van and drive to the Elkhart Police Department. Security cameras show Campbell tried to drive the van into the building not once but twice, somehow missing both times. On Campbell's third try, he backed right through the front doors of the Elkhart Fire Department. Police began chasing Campbell, who was caught after he crashed again into a flagpole. He was arrested and faces several felony charges, including driving while intoxicated.
That is what Courtney James of Columbus did on Wednesday afternoon. Had her front door wide open, letting the aroma of her pot brownies flow outside. And it just so happened that police were driving by. They got a search warrant for the woman's house and found 100 pot brownies plus more marijuana and some syringes. James was arrested on several drug-related charges.
Jasper police say Crandall Presnell got into an argument with a worker at Miranda's restaurant Thursday afternoon. Presnell went behind the counter and started punching and kicking the victim in the groin. Police say he then grabbed a broom and started beating the man with it. Presnell gave himself up when police arrived.
Elliot McKinley Montgomery isn't a name that you'll see in Revelation, but the Muncie Star-Press reports the man thinks he is the Antichrist and asks a judge for the opportunity to prove his family heritage and that he is the king of the earth. One of the handwritten documents he sent the court says that the world will end in 2031 and that until then, coronavirus will get worse. The other asks for a hearing to prove his claim to the throne. But until 2043, his throne is in the psych unit at Newcastle.
Last month, in a written letter to Mayor Lloyd Winicky's office, David Hippensteel said he wanted to smash the mayor's head like a watermelon. Then, last Friday, he called the mayor's office, demanding that he get a face-to-face meeting so he could smack Mayor Winicky like a Hippensteel faces two charges of intimidation.
Police blocked intersections to try and get Adam Jackson to stop driving the bulldozer Saturday morning. Though it only had a top speed of 6 miles per hour, police were worried the dozer could do damage or hurt someone. The Bartholomew County Sheriff's Office used an armored vehicle to persuade Jackson to stop. He faces multiple charges, including resisting law enforcement and vehicle theft.
His real name is Jody Trapp, and he was wanted by the feds for wire fraud and money laundering in 2013. They found him living in Utah, working as an electrician, and going by the name Admiral Abram the Pirate. He probably got the name by being the co-founder of an app called Treasure Finders, which mixes geocaching with scavenger hunts, according to KSL News Radio. The FBI will be bringing him back to Indiana, probably in a squad car, not a pirate ship.
Just before 2 a.m. Friday, Columbus police arrested Britney Spears. No, not that one. This one is 23 and from Columbus. CPD officers say she crashed her car at 10th Street and National Road, then tried to drive off. A breath test found Spears was drunk. She faces preliminary charges of operating a vehicle while intoxicated, leaving the scene of an accident, and false informing.
On Friday morning, a few Columbus police officers were helping Columbus East High School students with a project when they noticed a Corvette driving recklessly and brake-checking the car behind him. When the two vehicles came to a stop, the Corvette driver, Jonathan Mena, got out, threw a milkshake at the other car, and punched the windshield. Police arrested Mena for criminal mischief and reckless driving.
You're listening to 2021. Worth a second look.
Will you call us violent extremists?
Number two.
What will you say about the good men, the good guys that came out today?
What you're hearing are the sounds from Monument Circle in Indianapolis on January 6th. While then-President Trump gave a speech in Washington that some lawmakers have said inspired people to march to the Capitol and breach its barriers, a much smaller group of people who supported Trump and the idea that the election may have been rigged gathered at the Indiana State House.
Well, the Dominion systems, it was actually caught on camera that a gentleman was taking ballots out of the machine and refeeding them in that were Biden ballots.
This man's name? He says, Bill Patriot.
In Michigan, there was, you know, over 100,000 votes that mysteriously just appeared, you know, overnight between 3 and 4 a.m. that were all fraudulent, 99% of them for Biden.
Our opinions don't matter. The law matters.
Senator Todd Young confronting a group of Hoosiers near his office as election certification was near.
I value your opinion. I actually share your concerns. I share your conviction that President Trump should remain president. I share that conviction.
Meanwhile, at the Capitol.
But you have to go home now. We have to have peace. We have to have law and order. We have to respect our great people in law and order. We don't want anybody hurt.
During the protest, former Indiana Governor and Vice President Mike Pence had to be moved to an undisclosed location.
Madison McGill reporting.
He later tweeted, "Peaceful protest is the right of every American, but this attack on our Capitol will not be tolerated, and those involved will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law."
The violence was quelled. The Capitol is secured, and the people's work continues. We condemn the violence that took place here in the strongest possible terms. We grieve the loss of life in these hallowed halls, as well as the injuries suffered by those who defended our Capitol today.
I had busloads of constituents who drove to Washington, D.C. today. They drove through the night. Thousands of people from all over the state of Indiana who came to our nation's capital to make their voice heard, and that was interrupted by thugs who stormed the Capitol.
Condemnation of the violence from Hoosier representatives.
I hope that we prosecute those people that are seen in photos that did what they did, that cost the life of one individual and brought violence to the Capitol building.
Congressman Jim Banks and Larry Bouchon.
They incited a riot. The president's words were more inappropriate, and I think the president made a serious mistake by using those type of terms. It was taken literally.
The votes for president of the United States are as follows. Joseph R. Biden Jr. of the state of Delaware has received 306 votes. Donald J. Trump of the state of Florida has received 232 votes.
By proceeding with the certification of the election against the urging of President Trump and as one of his final duties as vice president, Mike Pence may have sealed his political fate. Shyla Kabalin reports.
He probably did lose some support from Trump supporters.
But Dr. Laura Wilson, a political science professor at UIndy, says as long as Pence sticks to his guns, he'll still have a long political future ahead of him.
Mike Pence has always shown he's very conservative. Christianity is very influential in his life. And by focusing on those as his guiding principles, he'll be able to forge a pathway and a future for himself wherever it may lie.
She says going forward, Pence should focus on himself and not the Trump administration.
On this vote, the ayes are 232, the nays are 197.
Then a second impeachment for Trump.
Just 7 days before Donald Trump leaves office and Joe Biden becomes president of the United States of America, the Democrat Party is dividing America even further.
Though Trump was not removed and there was a transition of power, the lasting legacy of what happened on January 6th has been twofold. The January 6th committee is now investigating what happened without the inclusion of Republican Jim Banks. And many of the Hoosiers who were involved in the chaos at the Capitol have been arrested and prosecuted, and some even sent to jail. Shyla Kabalin reports on one of the latest.
56-year-old Mark Mazza was arrested Wednesday. Court documents say he brought a loaded revolver to the Capitol, held doors open to allow rioters into the Capitol, and beat one officer with a baton. His revolver was later found at the Capitol's West Front Terrace.
The legacy of what happened on January 6th is sure to live on in 2022 with the January 6th committee in the U.S. House and a mission to determine responsibility for the Capitol attack, which some Indiana Republicans say translates into blaming the former president.
Number one.
The story at number one happened 4 months later and would test nerves and what people know and believe about the Second Amendment.
Thursday, April 15th, 2021. It was late in the evening at a FedEx ground facility on the west side of Indianapolis. It's FedEx's second busiest hub with nearly 4,000 employees. Police got a call that there had been a shooting there just after 11 o'clock. Workers were going through a shift change. Here's dispatcher audio.
Possibly 2 to 3 people shot at this time. The reference that ran my caller said it was a white male in a black hoodie armed with a shotgun. She never saw him leave the building. She's no longer on scene.
At least 100 people were at the facility when the shooting started. Kurt Darling reports on one man who was there.
Jeremiah Miller was getting ready to work another shift Thursday night, eating lunch with his coworkers. He heard the gunshot shortly after 11.
We hear two gunshots, and we think it's a car, a muffler, and then so we ignore it. We hear 3 shots after that.
He tells Wish TV that's when they got a little more concerned.
This made me stand up and actually look at the entrance door, and I saw a man with a submachine gun of some sort, an automatic rifle.
Miller says the man was shooting into the open. Miller ducked down, scared, but they were eventually able to get out.
It became obvious that the number of people shot started to grow. The shooting lasted less than 4 minutes. Police identified the shooter as 19-year-old Brandon Hull.
FedEx officials have confirmed that Mr. Hull was a former employee at the facility, and he was last employed in 2020.
IMPD Deputy Chief Craig McCart. Hull used two AR-15 style rifles and bought them legally from a licensed gun store in July and September of 2020. He was fired from FedEx that year for failing to return to work. In March of 2020, Hull's mother contacted police and warned them about her son's intent to die via suicide by cop and his purchase of a shotgun the day before. They took his gun away. Rob Connett reports on what came next.
In March of 2020, when police took away Brandon Hull's gun, they never gave it back. He was also given medical treatment.
The length of that stay was measured by hours and not days or weeks, and no follow-up medication was prescribed.
Marion County Prosecutor Ryan Meir says that's why there wasn't a red flag hearing to determine if Hull should have a weapon. And if there was one and the state lost, they would have to give the gun back to him.
This case does illustrate some of the shortcomings that exist with this red flag law.
Meir says they would only have 14 days to get a search warrant for his medical records, which limits what they're able to do and find.
The Sikh community was upset because Hull had browsed white supremacist websites in the past, and the Sikh coalition asked police to investigate whether bias played a role in the shooting, but FBI special agent in charge Paul Keenan says there was no indication that Hull had any animosity towards the Sikhs or any community in particular.
The shooter decided to commit suicide in a way which he believed would demonstrate his masculinity and capability while fulfilling a final desire to experience killing people.
He says Hull chose the FedEx facility because it was familiar to him. A lawsuit was filed by two survivors and the family of one of the people killed against the city of Indianapolis and the police department for failing to follow through on taking a gun away from Hull. They want more than $2 million. There's been a time for reflection from the likes of Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb.
I stand with the Sikh community and with each of the families of the victims.
The mayor of Indianapolis, Joe Hogsett.
And its impact will be felt by our community for days and weeks to come.
And Indiana Democratic Congressman Andre Carson, among others.
We seek to move forward, to pledge, to never forget those we lost.
So now the state of Indiana grieves the loss of 8 innocent people who died that day. Matthew Alexander, Samaria Blackwell, Amarjeet Jahal, Jaswinder Kaur, Jaswinder Singh, Amarjeet Skan, Carly Smith, and John Weissert. For 2021, Worth a Second Look, I'm John Herrick.
And the crew wishes you a fantastic 2022.